copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
It's great to see all the faces of the brave parents who are interested in learning how to take care of their teenagers. And I just want to find out, how many of you have children in the teenage years right now? Would you raise your hands? Oh, good. Okay, so we're going to be in the fight together. Some of you don't yet, and you're going, I need a lot of time to get ready. So I'm trying to find out right now. Maybe you don't have kids, and you're already getting ready. So I'm glad you're interested in this topic. It's a topic close to my heart because I've been working with teenagers all my life. So I actually love that generation. Here's a picture of a number of years ago of a camp that I did, one of many camps I've been on with teenagers. And you'll find my kids are somewhere in the mix. There's my wife right there. That's my daughter, who you saw her up front last night. She looked different back then. My middle son, my oldest son. And you can see that they were just right in the mix of all this youth ministry as we were focusing on teenagers. But our kids weren't teenagers, and they weren't there yet. Now, they grew, though. And then came the day when my children were teenagers, and I thought, I've got this figured out because I've been working with teens all my life. Well, it's different when you're the father or the parents to teens. And some of the things, even though I'd studied teenagers all my life, some of what we were facing surprised me. Now, this is just a little bit later on. By the time we took this picture, Tyler, who's our oldest, was in college, so that's why he looks a little bit older. But several things happened as they entered the teenage years. My daughter, who was just so sweet and I was so close to, all of a sudden she was distant and often judgmental. And she would make comments about how she didn't think what we were doing was right. And we, you heard a little bit last night, we started just really missing each other. So I was reaching out to her, or so I thought. But she was feeling, actually, judged by me, I was feeling like she didn't want a relationship with me. And we just started totally missing each other, which was a surprise to me because we'd been so close all our life. What's happened to my daughter that I can't connect with her? My middle son, Caleb, started becoming super sensitive to everything. You could just look at him wrong and he would take offense. And just about every day he was coming home from school saying, so-and-so said this and that hurt me, or I'm feeling left out, or I'm feeling like I don't belong. I'd say, Caleb, why are you just so oversensitive to all these relationships? And he didn't know. And then my oldest son, he was quite social and open, but in his high school years began to kind of retreat to his room. And we didn't see a lot of him. And he would be reading a lot of the time, or back in himself, kind of like he retreated into himself. And we were kind of going, why? What's going on? And I remember being surprised that even though I knew a lot about teenagers, all of a sudden I had them in my own home. I can remember when I was about 10 years old talking to my dad about teenagers and him saying, you know, the teenagers are tough. He said, in fact, when you become a teenager, you might even feel rebellious against me. And I can remember as a 10-year-old going, oh, Dad, that'll never happen to me. I'll never feel that way. No, why would I ever feel those things? And then hitting those teenage years and being confused even about what I was experiencing. Like, I don't even understand what's going on in me. So these are, by the way, we made it. We made it to the other end. Here's my family just about a month ago, and we're all out the other end. None of them are teenagers anymore, and we made it, and we survived. So I'm going to talk some today about some strategies for making it through these years in a healthy way, and not only just making it through, but capitalizing on them so that they're actually even rich. And now you can see I'm a grandpa, so that's really fun. So what are some of the, well, let's start, there's opportunities and dangers. What are some of the dangers of parenting teenagers that you experience? Like, if you've got teenagers at home, what are some of the particular challenges of this phase of life? What would you say? You can just, anyone can speak up. You all, yeah.
Keep treating them as their kids.
Yeah, keep treating them as kids, and they do not want to be treated that way anymore. No way, no, and I'm not a kid anymore, yes.
treating them as adults, and they're not supposed to be.
And that's another thing, is you're treating them as adults, but I'm expecting you to be totally responsible, but they aren't yet, right? Yes.
They compare themselves to other
teenagers. They compare themselves all the time, and they seem to be just so over-concerned about, do they fit? How do they look? That person got more likes than I did. Okay, what other challenges? Yes?
Dealing with different abilities in a family, that it's easy to actually give in or give too much to the one that seemingly has fewer abilities.
Okay.
Because the one who has all these abilities seems to be getting enough from the outside.
Okay, so maybe
you can throw way off balance.
Yeah, and actually that's one of the things that happened when our middle son was sick through a number of these years, and so he was getting a lot more of our attention than our older son, who everything was going fine with. And so actually some of his withdrawal into himself was like, where do I fit into the family? So any other things that you face? Yes?
Parents know nothing.
Parents know nothing. That's right. Parents know nothing when you're a teenager. Like, that's so stupid. They have none of the answers. Yeah.
Helping them cope with dangerous ideologies that want to take over them.
Right. They're hearing things at school or from their friends that are actually really dangerous, but they don't seem to have all the filters up yet. And they go, wow, that's an interesting thought. We're going, no, it's not. What else?
They also are searching for gold on their own.
Right, and even sometimes, even if they were raised in a Christian family, they often have a crisis of faith in these years, and maybe even should have a crisis of faith, because they have to go from a childhood faith to the faith of an adult. And so how do you shepherd them through them all of a sudden asking some basic question like, does God really exist? Wait, you grew up in church. You're the one who memorized all the verses and could tell all the Bible stories, and now you're asking that question? So what do you do with that? Any other crisis or
relationship with parents change, and they stop sharing their life.
Okay, so a relationship that maybe was very close,
yes,
then all of a sudden changes. Yeah. And you can actually feel like, am I in that? Do I have the same child in the house that I? This is, you're a totally different person. What happened to the 12-year-old that I knew? You're 14 or 15, and I don't even recognize you because of how the changes.
They start criticizing parents.
They start criticizing, yeah, and not just parents, but a lot of they can be. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons why. Yeah.
They discover sexuality.
Yes, and all of a sudden that turns on. And how do you handle all those hormones? They're discovering sexuality, and all of a sudden they have the ability to make babies, and they don't have the wisdom to be anywhere near that. And so, wow, how can that be? So, yeah.
They start looking for their own identity, but don't know where to look.
They don't know where to look, but they're looking for their own identity, and often very lost in that process. Now, I said the opportunities and dangers. Opportunities? There's a Chinese, you know, Chinese have pictures for words when they write them, and they have a particular word. They have the word for crisis is composed of two sub-pictures, and one is opportunity and the other is danger. And I think the teenage years are a time of crisis, they're a time of danger, and a time of great opportunity. Because how many, there are many people, that's where they find their passion for Jesus and become sold out to following Christ. Many of them, that's where they discover their gifts and just grow in amazing ways. Actually, they're still wiring their brains during this period. Their brains aren't fully formed till they're 25 years old. And so you have the opportunity to actually wire in judgment and wire in the ability to make good decisions and experience just... Actually, when I look back, the teenage years for us were some of the most fun in our family. We just have some incredible memories of that time. So the question is not just how can you survive the teenage years, but how can you manage the crisis, get around the dangers, and capture the opportunities that this time of real turbulence, this time of real rough waters brings you. And so that's going to be a question today. Not just how to survive, but how to even potentially thrive through those teenage years. Now, one of the things that has been particularly helpful for me is understanding actually what's going on in the teenage mind and the teenage development during these days. Because even though we all went through it, we forget these things. We forget why all of a sudden at 13 everything starts to change. And it's important to understand that within the mind of young people, two things change as they grow. The content, what they know, so they learn more and more. But the other thing that changes is structure, which is how they organize what they know. So what they know changes, increases, but structure also changes. And they change in different ways. Content is added gradually over time, but structure changes abruptly in stages or in steps. So here's how, you know, they're just growing and learning content, but the structure of how they think jumps, and it jumps at certain points in times. And it's like if you'd say in their mind is a file system with lots of information, and every so often the whole organizational system of that file cabinet changes. So it's been organized A, B, C, D, and then they go, oh, let's organize it according to the Dewey Decimal System, numbers. Or let's organize it according to the size of the folders. And so they pull everything out and start putting things back in, and stuff gets lost and it gets put in the wrong place. Because it's not just about the content, it's also about the way their minds actually are functioning, the organizing system of their minds. And people who, these changes affect some key areas. It changes affect logic, how they think, how they logically make sense of things. Here's an example from Calvin and Hobbes, the great philosopher Calvin and Hobbes. So there's Calvin saying, oh no, everything has suddenly turned neo-cubist. It all started when Calvin engaged his dad in a minor debate. Soon Calvin could see both sides of the issue. He could see both sides of the issue. Then poor Calvin began to see both sides of everything. The traditional single viewpoint has been abandoned. Perspective has been fragmented. The multiple views provide too much information. It's impossible to move. Calvin quickly decides to eliminate all but one perspective. It works. The world falls into a recognizable order. You're still wrong, Dad. But actually, this is insightful because in the mind of a child, they do just have one viewpoint. It's very difficult for them to look at multiple viewpoints at once, to step outside of themselves, even look back on themselves. And so there's a logic, there's a concrete cause and effect logic that forms the organizing system of how they work. Also, moral reasoning, how we decide what is right and wrong. If you ask someone who's 9, should you steal or should you not, whether they decide to or not, it's interesting to talk about how they reason about that choice. And if they say, why should you not steal, they'll say, because you'll get caught, or because you'll get punished, or because you'll get a spanking. And they're very much law and order, cause and effect. What's going to happen to me? By the way, if you ask a high school student or a teenager, their moral reasoning will be totally different. And if I asked you your moral reasoning, you probably would say, why shouldn't you steal? Well, because that would be dishonoring to God. I'm a follower of Jesus. You'd probably be thinking about principles and not just about getting caught or not caught. I hope that would be more about getting caught and not getting caught. So moral reasoning changes. And the view of relationships, what relationships mean, how they work, how we build them, how we maintain them. Now, in every phase of life, you do build and maintain relationships, but you build and maintain them in different ways. So how does this affect teenagers? Well, also the source of authority. Who we listen to and why. Who we listen to and why changes. So a 10-year-old will see an authority as someone who wears a uniform and has a hat and has an office. And a teenager will say, well, that uniform looks stupid on them. I don't care about their title. They're no authority to me. So what gives authority to someone in the teenagers? We'll look at that in a minute. So these four things change abruptly when the stages change, and their whole kind of mental organizing system is affected. According to Fowler, Piaget, Kohlberg, these are all developmental psychologists and others. There are 5 basic stages. Each is characterized by a different stream in which the person is embedded. So here's kind of a picture of people standing on this whatever raft floating down a river, and so they're embedded in the river. They just stand, but they move. They're in something that's moving, but they're kind of embedded in it, and so it looks like the banks are moving because they're embedded in the stream of the river. And so typically the organizing system that they work from, they're embedded in. It's hard for them to actually observe it from the outside, and you'll see this in a minute, but it actually it is your operating system. It is the world, it is the water that you're in. You're embedded in that stream. And I'll show you what that means in just a minute. So here are the stages, and we'll particularly focus on the stage that young people, that high school students get and teenagers get into. Stage one is intuition. They're embedded in the stream of intuition. So they feel things intuitively. Their logic is an intuitive logic. I remember once my asking my son, he answered a question really well, and I said, "Tyler, how did you know that?" And he goes, "I don't know. I just knowed." I just knowed. And he just intuitively felt. You can't expect people at this age to give you a logical reasoned argument. They just feel things intuitively. And so also at this stage, I remember my son coming in, running in and saying, "Daddy, Mickey grew." Said, "What do you mean? Mickey grew? Mickey the mouse is taller. Mickey's taller." And then I go in and find out that my wife has replaced the cardboard box that our TV has been sitting on with an actual cabinet. And so the TV is higher. So Mickey grew. So do you see this intuitive sense? The intuitive experience of this is Mickey is taller, so he grew. The actual truth is that we replaced a box with a cabinet. But in this age, they experience the whole world in very intuitive ways, which is why faith is no problem to someone in these ages. You say, "Jesus exists, that's wonderful. I love Jesus, he's my best friend." No problem with miracles or with talking rabbits or elephants that fly or any of that, because it's just all part of this intuitive kind of world. And in this intuition, the greatest authority, like tall people have authority. They do, because they're taller. You know, my parents have authority. People that are strong have authority. You just feel, okay, intuitively what gives someone authority. That would be in this intuition stage. Stage two, and by the way, that 7 to 15, it probably should be, these are rough, that probably should be 13, because most people now are going into puberty earlier. But this stage two is this stage of events. And so they're embedded in the stream of events, which means they think in cause and effect relationships and very logical, concrete reasoning. So if you ask someone in the junior high, the Dorost in Czech age, if you would ask them about a movie that they went to, they'll tell you the whole plot line of the movie, because the movie exists in the unfolding events of the movie. And that's how it's stored in their brain, is in this logical role. They're great at memorizing scripture here. They love stories, but they learn it like this. If you have an event for people this age, the first thing they'll ask, if you say, "Hey, the junior high group, the Doris group, is going on a retreat. Do you want to go?" And the first thing they'll say is, "What will we do there? What are we going to do there?" Because the event exists in what we do. That's what made the event. They'll come back from a retreat and they'll say, "We did this and we did this and this, and this was fun and this was hard," and this, their evaluations tend to be like that. I actually kept a journal when I was this age, and I wish I had it with me. I can go back and show you, because this is how my journal looked. I woke up at 7:15. I had 2 eggs for breakfast. Then I went out and played in the yard. It was fun. Dad came home at 3. We all went da 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 da, and then I always say exactly what time I got up, exactly what time I went to bed, what I did, and then these very short evaluations. It was fun. It was hard. I liked that. It's just these concrete events. Now, by the way, also at that time, I could in the summer wear the same white T-shirt for 2 weeks in a row, and it didn't bother me, and never look in the mirror because I did not care how I looked. I didn't care what I wore. I didn't care what I looked like. I didn't care, you know, if I was taller, shorter than anyone else. It just mattered if, you know, if I could ride my bike with my friends, because that was great. This all this event stage. And so, and then things change. And you hit this. And this is where teenagers are. And all of a sudden it goes from events to the whole organizing element. The file system that they're working in is the file system of relationships. And this sometimes changes within just a couple of months. If you look at my journals, you can find the 2 months where that changes. And all of a sudden, I'm not saying what time I woke up in the morning. I'm not saying what I ate. I'm saying, I really felt left out at school today. And I wonder if anyone likes me. And I've got zits on my face, and I'm embarrassed. Acne. And I can remember looking in the mirror and going like this and asking my sister, what should I wear today? Because I have no idea, but I know it's not going to be that white shirt that I wore all week. And then all the other thing is, in this stage, this is the first time that they all of a sudden have their mind starts to rewire, and they can suddenly, I can see you seeing me. So I could see Kashla. I can think, oh, she's looking at me. I wonder what she's thinking. I wonder if she thinks I'm stupid. Oh, she. Oh, she's been looking at me the whole time. That's probably because, and I start to look at myself through her eyes, a teenager does, and what it feels like is the whole room is looking at me. Everyone's looking at me. And so they become unbelievably self-conscious. Looking down, going like this, you say something, and they just react. And also in this early stage, part of the stage, they could be unbelievably cruel to each other, because now all of a sudden they're aware of these relationships and they don't know how to act, and they will cut each other down or say stupid things to try to, they're surfing this world of relationships. In fact, early part of this is, they can be so cruel to each other. But now everything is about relationships. The whole world runs on relationships. All information is filed in the folders of relationships. So we have a retreat. And what's the question? Not what are we going to do?
Well,
who's going? And who's going? What's the key question on who's going? Who's going? Oh, a lot of famous people are going. I don't care, right? A lot of smart people are going. I don't care. Are my friends going? Am I going to feel accepted there? Am I going to feel left out? Am I going to be the one sitting on the outside? Are the other people there like me? And so they're actually, that will be the key event. And they'll come back from a weekend retreat and tell you, they won't tell you anything about what they did. They'll just tell you about the relationships. Well, I got in a room with someone really fun. We talked all night. And I can remember when my son got to this stage, we had done lots of fun things together, and it was always, hey, let's go hiking or whatever. And one week he said, Dad, can we go to coffee? I was like, go to coffee? I mean, he was about 14 years old. He didn't know how to actually express it, but he was like, I want to do something relational with you. And all of a sudden it was about the relationship, not the event that we did together. Like, let's just talk. And teenagers also can talk. And they're willing to be under a bridge in the rain, in the cold, if they're with their group of people that they feel like they belong to, and they can talk and experience that incredible, relational, wonderful, amazing dynamic. The world runs on relationships. Why are teachers good? Because they're their friends. Why is someone an authority? Because they have a relationship. In fact, there was a study done where they were trying to keep teenagers from drinking and driving. So this is in the United States, where they can drive at 16, so they can't here. And so they took a team through high schools and did a presentation on accidents with alcohol. And they showed all these pictures of wrecked cars and people that were injured and this and all these statistics. And then they came back and did a study if that changed any behavior. Do you think it did? Not at all. Not a bit of behavior. And this is what the young people said. They said, my friends drink and drive and none of them have gotten in an accident. See, everything comes through the channel of friendship and the people I know. And it doesn't matter. You're an authority if you're my friend. I don't care if you have some degree or you wear some hat I don't care anything about that. Are you my friend? Then that's how you gain authority in those ages. So then what they did was they changed it, and they got teenagers the same age as they were, live people telling stories of how drinking and driving had ruined their lives, and all of a sudden it was real. Okay, now I have a relationship with that person. Well, that's information in my peer group, and that impacted their choices. Now, This is stage four, concepts and ideas. You organize according to concept. By the way, most adults are in stage four. So you're thinking most adults are in stage four. Some adults never get out of stage three. Most adults are in stage four. So stage four is about logically organized systems, concepts, things making sense. It in some ways has some similarities to stage two. Actually, the off stages have similarities to each other. So the intuition and relationships does. But most adults are in this. And so because of that, actually what's interesting is stage four usually parents stage two better, because you can say, hey, if you do this, this will happen. Here are the concept, here's the idea, keep that. But stage four and stage three often have conflict, because you try to logically reason them through things and they're thinking relationally. And you're, wait, it doesn't matter the relationships. It doesn't matter what your friends think. Do what's right. Wow, it's just, you know, I don't have a file folder for that information. Like, talk to me relationally. So, and then a few people get to stage five. I say only 5 to 10% of the adult population get to stage five, which is the stage of principles. And here's just a quick, this goes through the logic, moral reasoning, relationship, source of authority, and tells you how they work. We don't have time to go through that, but here we go, teenagers. They start to think in abstract ways, hypothesize. Think about what's going on below the surface. What could be, what should be? That's why they get very critical. What's moral reason? What's proper in my group? What do people important to me expect from me? Relationships. I think a lot about what you think about me. My sense of identity depends on my relationship. I choose my friends based on who I feel accepted and similar to. And by the way, they don't understand it either. When they make this shift, it's like, do you remember when you learned how to drive and you got in a car and you were going, oh, wait, how to, left, and you turn too tight and you don't get the clutch right. That's what they're like with their brains. They don't know how to drive their brains. This is all new. And they're all over the road with this stuff, because it's surprising to them too. They don't know why they're so concerned about relationships. Okay, let's keep going. File down. I'm going to give you one more, and then a thing about those. So I talked about danger and opportunity. It actually is a crisis time. We talked about the change in stages, and here's one other piece that helps you remember. Is you actually in the teenage years are navigating the path to independence. You're navigating the path from dependence to independence, and often we view our parenting more like this. I've got them for 18 years, and then they go. So let me get everything fixed right here, because then at some point I send them off to college and they're gone. And actually, that's not a good way to parent. The teenage years look more like this. You're on a gradient scale where you're launching them into adulthood, actually for 4 or 5 years. And you don't want to just get to the end and go, okay, it's done. You actually want to in a gradiated way, increase their independence over the years, so that when they leave you at 18, they're prepared to be out on their own. And I think a lot of parents think, oh, I've got to enjoy these last years, because then I'm going to lose them. Oh, they're gone. Instead of saying teenage years, you actually are you're preparing them to launch. You're preparing them to leave. You're getting them ready to leave. And this is your opportunity, while they're still under your roof, to teach them those things. And so the teenage years should actually be a gradation for increased independence under your care, and very purposefully shepherding them into adulthood. This is not just finishing those school years and then you're gone. You actually you're getting them ready to go. You're preparing them to leave. And then purposely thinking about that. So that's a lot of practical issues. Are they learning how to manage money on their own? Are they learning to make more and more decisions that they carry responsibility for? Are they carrying more responsibility in the family? Are they getting prepared with learning how to work? When they walk out your door, it's not this, boom, independence. But it's just one more small step. They've been ready for it because you've been thinking about it all through those teenage years. Okay. So let me tell you some parenting strategies. So what can you do based on the fact that you've got danger and opportunity, based on the fact that you've just moved from where you're in stage three of development, based on the fact that you're preparing them to launch, And here's the first thing. Use the power of relationship. Use the power of relationship. Often we use the power of authority or logic or volume in our voice. But the greatest power you have during this year is the power of relationship. When I did my master's thesis, I interviewed a number of teenagers, and I asked them, what's the biggest influence on your spiritual growth? And of all the factors, 50% of the factors were mom and dad. In other words, mom and dad's voice and influence was as strong as all of the other influences combined, including the peers, which they will never tell you. They'll never let you know that. During the teenage years, they'll never let you know how important your perspective is, how much their relationship means to you, how much they care about what you say, because they're actually pushing off trying to find themselves. But they still care like crazy. And so one of the things that parents have to do is you have to maintain the closeness of your relationship with your teens during these years. And it'll be bumpy. It's kind of like riding a little bit of a wild horse. And you'll get pushed off and then either go, oh, they're teenagers, they don't want to be close to me. Or your relationship turns into a fighting relationship that all the time it's these fights back and forth. Your friendship with your kids is so important during this age. I was talking to one of our staff, and he was. I said, "How are you doing this week?" He said, "I'm just ripped up inside." I said, "Why?" He said, "I had such a relationship with my son, and we're fighting all the time. I'm worried he's going to start doing drugs. He's not hanging around with the right people. He's dating a girl, and I'm not sure if that should happen. And he will not listen to me." And I said, "Just tell me more about how that happens." He said, "Well, we just argue all the time." I said, "Where are you when you're arguing?" He said, "Well, usually in the living room." I said, "Like where in the living room? Sitting down?" "No." He said, "No, I'm standing up and he's standing up. And I'm trying to catch him as he's going through." And I said, "Okay, you got to change things. Here's where you need to talk. You need to talk in his room after you've knocked on the door and asked permission to come in. And you need to sit on the floor, because that's what friends do. They sit on the floor. They don't stand. Sit on the floor. And you need to have so much time that you can stay there as long as you want till the conversation is done. And you need to ask him, first of all, what are you feeling? What are you experiencing? And listen to him. And then you have a relationship. And then you just can talk in a very normal tone of voice and explain why you're thinking about this and what you're concerned about and where that would go. And I said, your son will remember every word you said. And so he did that. So instead of standing yelling in the living room, he went up and knocked on his door, went down, sat on the floor, had plenty of time and a calm voice. You just think about what does it mean to be a friend to a teenager, and then you're the parent. And the thing is, you can pull out the parent card any time in the conversation. You can get to the end of the conversation and they not agree and say, "You know what? I'm dad. You have to do what I say. Sorry about that." You know, you can pull the dad card at any point, but use the relational card first. Use the friendship card. Talk about, you care about them. You care about your relationship with them. I mentioned this in an earlier session yesterday, but I have some really strong memories of my childhood. And one of them, I've told my dad this story, and he doesn't remember it. But I was a teenager, and one of those tense times with him, and he was asking me to do something. He had some work that he wanted me to do, and I was tired. You know, teenagers are always tired. They're growing so much, their body's changing. I didn't want to do it. And we started arguing, and I got mad, and I walked out of the living room, and I slammed the door, and I went down to my room, and I laid down on my bed, just face down, and I was just like, "My dad is doing something he doesn't understand. He's on blue water." And then all of a sudden, I heard a knock on my door. Okay, knock on the door. And my dad said, "Could I come in?" I guess. I mean, he owns a house, so I can't say no. So he came in, he sat down on the bed, and he put his hand on my shoulder. Now, I'm not giving any indication that I want to talk at all, and your teenagers won't. And he said, "Dave, I was thinking about our conversation, and I just came down to apologize. I spoke to you in anger, and I shouldn't have done that. Would you forgive me?" Well, I mean, that was pretty amazing. that he reflected on it and then came down and said, and see, now he's reaching out in this relational way. I think I was wrong, but he saw his wrong. And then he went on and he said, Dave, you're my son, and I care so much about my relationship with you. And I know these are going to be hard years, but I'm going to fight for our relationship. I want to be close. I want nothing to come between us. So if something does, would you please tell me? Because I want us to be close. Do you hear those words from a stage three friendship perspective? Like, my dad wants to be close to me. So it's not just about, did I get the work done when he wanted it to on time? But he actually cares about the relationship. And I remember saying, okay, yeah. I mean, I didn't do more than that. Because they won't let you know. But I remember every word of that conversation till today. I told it to my dad. He doesn't remember it at all. It's just gone. But because it came into me very strongly on that relational channel. And then when the relationship's there, then I can talk about everything else. You know, so let's talk about everything else. Let's go. So lead with relationship. And what often happens in this stage is you get so frustrated that you break it. No, wait, you're not going to talk to me that way. No, well, you know, you said you were going to be home at 8 and it was 10 o'clock. And you lead with the issue and say, once we get this issue done, then we can be close. You've got to lead with the relationship, and that gives you the opportunity to talk about the issues. I mean, you're still mom and dad. You're still there. But the relationship is just super important. And in this, you have no idea how much they want you to like them and like who they are. No idea. They won't tell you this. But just as they're super sensitive to everyone else, and if they like them, they really wonder, does mom like me? They really wonder, does dad like me? Does he think I'm just kind of strange? Because I think I'm strange. My nose is too big right now. I've got things, weird things on my face. I can remember when my kids were in high school. My middle son went through tanechny, which is learning how to dance in the Czech Republic. And they, for 3 or 4 months, they do all these dancing things. And then there's a ball where the parents are all invited. So we were all invited to this. And right before the ball, I talked to someone that I'd been counseling with. And he called me and says, I think I'm going to leave my wife. I was going, oh, no, you can't do that. And so I go to this ball, and this is in my mind the whole time. So I'm sitting at the table watching my son dance, you know, but while it's going on, I'm going, man, this guy can't leave his wife. Fucking, how's he going to say it? Oh, that's terrible, you know. But this is going on in the back of my head the whole time as my son's doing his dance. In fact, one time I slipped away, went to the bathroom, and stayed in there a while so I could make a phone call and just say, don't do anything till we get to talk more, you know, and then came back into my son's dance. Well, it ended, and we went home, and I'm sitting downstairs, and my wife comes to me, and she says, you got to talk to Caleb. And I said, why? She said, he is so mad at you right now. He's so disappointed. And I get defensive. You know, like, wait, I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. And she said, I said, why? He said, she said, because of the dance time. Well, what'd I do wrong? He said, you'll have to hear from Caleb. You need to go up and talk to him. Okay. You're not helping me, honey. So I go up. I mean, this is you're riding bumpy waters, you know. I mean, this is teenage years are wow. So I go up and I knock on his door. Caleb, can I come in? Come in. He's face first on his bed. And I said, Caleb, mom tells me that you're not happy about something. He says, no. And then he turned around and says, Dad, why did you do that? I said, what do you mean, why did you do? Didn't you know how important this was for me tonight? Well, yeah, I mean, I was there. He said, yeah, you were physically there, but your mind was somewhere totally different. He said, every time I looked, you weren't looking at me. I didn't have your eyes. He says, your body was there, but you weren't there, Dad. Didn't you know how important that night was for me? Now, I'm sitting down there going, there's 300 people in this room. You know, my son's here with all of his friends. He doesn't care about what I think, right? No, he cares a lot about what you think. Your teenagers will not tell you this, but they care like crazy about what you think. And then I said, Caleb, I said something was going on, but actually that's no excuse. I have absolutely no excuse. All I can say is I'm sorry. I failed you tonight. I wasn't here for you. will you forgive me? And then I say, I really care about our relationship. I don't want anything to come between us. So thank you even for being willing to tell me some hard things. And he said, yeah, well. And then he said, well, Dad, you know why I did Tainanchini, didn't you? I said, yeah, because there's a lot of cute girls there. I mean, you want to, you learn how to dance. He said, no, that's not why I did it. You know why I did it, didn't you? Don't you? And I said, why? He said, to make you proud of me. That's why I did it. Oh, man, then I felt really bad. I blew it. But I just forgot how important my eyes, my nod, my approval, my, wow, that was awesome, was to my teenage son. Because nothing that he was doing would have let me know that, you know. They won't let you know, but that doesn't mean it's not super important. And so you've got to just use the power of relationships. Sit on the floor. Let them know that, oh, I'm so glad you're my son. I'm so glad you're my daughter. I enjoy it whenever we get to spend time together. It just means the world to them. Yeah, you'll get out the other side. It won't be there all along. That's fine. So I did talk to him about it. Training the adolescent mind. So now they got this new capacity for abstract reasoning, but they got this car that they don't know how to drive. And the way they learn to drive it is actually by trying it out. They have to kind of bounce off the guardrail. How do you train them? You train them by discussion. And one of the things that happens is often parents parent young children by discussion, and they parent adolescents by commands. So they have these long discussions with kids. Don't discuss long with kids. Tell them, stop that or it will hurt. You don't discuss, but you do discuss with adolescents because you're training them to think. And often they'll say, why do I have to do that? Shut up and listen. I'm your dad. Stop arguing. You know, and you'll be grounded for it. And we shorten the conversation with teenagers. We need to lengthen the conversations and actually help them think. So I remember one time I asked my dad, I said, Dad, some of my friends are asking me to go to a party. Should I go or not? Well, let's see. Should I go or not? So the answer is yes or no, right? And this is what he said. He said, well, when you're facing a decision like that, how should you think about it? I said, what do you mean, how should you think about it? No, how do you make a decision like that? Well, I don't know. Well, what principles would be important to keep in mind? Well, I don't know. Well, let's start thinking through them, you know. And we had a 45-minute discussion about whether I should go to the party or not. But it wasn't a discussion of my opinion against his. Like, I think you should go, well, I think you should. Oh. It was, here's how you make a decision like that. And so, and sometimes I say, well, everyone's going. Okay, great. So everyone's going. So what does that mean? We go down that road. And they actually need to go down various roads and try them out. But it's best if you can drive that new car with someone sitting beside you to help you so you don't get in a wreck. So go on those journeys with them. Well, what if we got to the end and I said, well, I think this. And he goes, I think you made a wise decision because I learned how to make it. Another time I said, Dad, Do you ever wonder if God really exists? And now I've grown up in a Christian home. My dad's a missionary. And he goes, yeah, sometimes I do. You do? Yeah. You know, what, are you wondering if God exists right now? Yeah, I kind of am. Well, what are some of the reasons? And you see us now exploring, thinking, and because they have to go like this to train their minds, and we start going, oh, no, they're going to get lost. Yeah, they're going to get lost if you just leave them on their own. But follow some of those trails and say, yeah, what if God exists? And he says, yeah, and here's some of the reasons when I think wonder, but here's some of the things that have helped me. And one of the things my dad did with me when I was in that age, he trained me to think by the longer discussions and by allowing the hypothetical situation. Well, what would happen if this? Well, let's go down this road. Follow that. Okay, well, how about, because they're hypothesizing, well, let them hypothesize together with you and train them in that. Leading your team from foolishness to wisdom. In the book of Proverbs, which the book of Proverbs has a, my son, you know, there's that tone, so it really is about this. There are four main characters in the book of Proverbs that repeat. One is the wise man. Second is the fool. Third is the simple. And the fourth is the wicked man. You'll see those characters repeating or various forms of that. So the wise man, the fool, the simple man, and the wicked. And when you get into, we don't have time to get it, but if you go into Proverbs 9, which he starts launching into it and he's setting it up, he talks about the wisdom is calling, and then he says calling to the simple. The simple is actually a neutral term. It means they're uninstructed. It means they just don't know yet. And teenagers are simple. They're simple. And the danger is that they become fools instead of wise people, and that they don't understand that there are wicked people out in the world that actually purposely want to take them astray. And in Proverbs, the difference between a fool and a wise man is a wise man can see the consequences of his actions or her actions. A wise man can see down the road. So a little sleep, a little slumber, a little laying of the hands to rest, and poverty strikes like a bandit and scarcity like an armed man. He's be like the ant who's wise, who puts things away. Basically, wisdom is able to say, I'm making a choice here, and I can see way down the road what the consequences will be, so I'm going to avoid unrighteousness and make steps of wisdom. The fool just thinks in the moment. They just think in the moment. While teenagers just think in the moment. And so they're simple. Now, they don't think in the moment. They think in the moment because they're actually simple, but they have danger of becoming fools. And so part of the how we lead them to wisdom is by training them to lift their eyes and seek the consequences of their actions. Now, sometimes people parent by saying, this is the consequence of your action. You keep talking to me like that, and you're grounded. You do that, and you miss dinner. And the consequence of the action is the punishment imposed by the parent. So, for a teenager, oh, I just have a couple years and that's gone, and then I have no more reason to do that. So if I don't smoke because dad will get mad, well, when dad's gone, then the reason's gone. Do you see that? And often the way we parent puts the consequence up so close that they never see the consequences farther out. And so at that time, it's best to, again, have the longer conversation about why you don't want to choose that behavior, irregardless of the punishment or not, because these are the consequences that will come as you go down that road. So you're arguing with your brother. Stop and say, hey, 4 years from now, well, how do you think your relationship is going to be like with your brother if you keep arguing like that? What? Do you want to be known as someone who, and you lift the horizon, and not in an argumentative way, in a gracious, loving way, help them train their mind to become wise instead of fools. Central role of faith, hope, and love. You got to believe you're going to make it out the other end, even though it gets bumpy. And teenagers can feel that. If they think you don't think they're going to make it, they will get very nervous. And so they need to feel from you, we're going to make it. I love you. I believe in God. I hope for the best. And that settles them down during the times where they wonder if they can make it as well. Remember, some parents I knew, their kids hit this phase and they didn't know what to do. And so they kept saying, you keep going like that, you're going to end up in prison. You keep doing that, you're going to just be a criminal. And guess where their kids ended up? In prison. Because it was kind of like this, my hands are off, I don't know what to do, was actually pushing them in that direction instead of saying, you know, this is a tough time, but we're going to get through it because we're going to keep working on it. And I go, God loves you and I love you, and we're going to get out the other end. And I think that faith, hope, and love is believing that you're going to make it. And then using the broader community of the church, sometimes you need to purposefully work on the other relationships your teenagers have. Get them into a good youth group. Find someone who's older who will spend some time with them. But you actually need help parenting during the teenage years from the broader community. And I could say a little bit more about that. And the last one is making space for teenage parenting. They say that parenting children, preschool children, is physically demanding, but parenting adolescents is emotionally demanding. And you have to have space for that. So if you just think, oh, my kids are old, they can understand everything I'm saying, they can carry their own lunch boxes and walk to school, they don't need as much time for me. Actually, teenage years, you have to be on call. You have to be ready for the conversation, the unplanned conversation. Have time for the longer discussion, and the teenage parenting takes a lot of space. So I think sometimes parents of teenagers check out too soon. They think they're done, and actually the teenage years are one of the most important. And We are out of time. So you guys have done a great job of listening and engaging. If you have any other questions, you can ask me afterwards. Thank you so much. Okay, great.